I'm a UX director. I work at Ipsos, which is a global market research company. And I've been in UX for around 22 years. I used to own my own UX agency, and I've worked at places like the BBC and Air Traffic Control. And outside of work, I love football, my Xbox, and playing with my kids. You know, UX is what happens between screens and beyond screens. It's not, I think it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking it's a website and it's just this screen that I'm designing for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's beyond that. It's the whole experience right up to the end of reaching that goal for the user.
Okay, one thing you love about your son?
His fearlessness.
Hello, fellows. Welcome to the next episode of Jagged with Jasravi, Conversations at the Edge with thought leaders from the marketing, branding, and the business world. Today, we have Damien. Hi, Damien. It's so nice to have you on my show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Great. So let's start with a very basic question, Damien. What is UX?
Yeah, and amazingly, even after 20 years, I still struggle to define what it is. And I think that tells us quite a lot about where the industry is.
Hmm.
So, and I think the reason it's so difficult to define is because everyone, from a project manager to a developer to a designer, all affect the user experience.
Hmm.
And I think where it has become even more difficult is with CX and service design, and the boundaries are very blurry. But I think fundamentally, UX is defined more by its process than what it is. So, and I think the process is quite unique, which is about, you know, understanding users right at the very start of the process, understanding what their needs are, and then basically testing any assumptions very early on, and ensuring that any ideas or assumptions are tested thoroughly throughout the process, iteratively, so that when you get to that point of launching, you already know users need it, you already know they want it, you already know that it works.
Mm.
So I think that's the essence of the UX process for me.
Okay. So Damien, like you said, it is very broad and it includes everything that has a user interface, whether it's a web, whether it's a voice interface, or even a service. So our audiences can really appreciate the entire spectrum and how broad it can be, would you say unboxing is also a part of UX designing that?
I would, because I think what we do in UX is we look at what's the user goal? What are they trying to achieve in this interaction? And I guess that's, maybe I should have explained as well a little bit further that, you know, CX and UX are slightly different in that CX looks at the entire relationship across multiple touch points, whereas UX tends to sort of zoom in on a touch point at a time. And it's not that we don't look at the whole journey, because we do, but we look at one touch point at a time and we look at what's the user goal here? What is the user trying to achieve? So in unboxing, it might be that the user is looking to buy a gift for somebody. Okay, so that brand then represents that person in that exchange. And when the gifter receives the box, whatever it might be, and they unpack it, that is all part of the experience. It's all part of the same journey and the same goal. So, and it, I guess it also covers other layers, like, you know, with healthcare, there's been a lot more self-administered drugs, for example, now. So, what happens then is the unboxing experience takes on an extra layer, which is, you know, unpackaging it. So you've got things like, how easy is it to open the box? You know, can people with arthritis or mobility issues access it easily? But then you've also got the instructions for use and how you actually use and understand how to use this thing. And I think particularly with something like healthcare, that's where it becomes very important that, you know, self-administering a dose, for example, the person has to understand how easy is it to, you know, do they know what to do? Where do they dispose of the parts? You know, what happens if something goes wrong? I think all of that is part of the journey. I kind of have a bit of a mantra on, which is, you know, UX is what happens between screens and beyond screens. It's not, I think it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking it's a website and it's just this screen that I'm designing for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's beyond that. It's the whole experience right up to the end of reaching that goal for the user.
Right. That's what you always talk about, that you imply with context, the larger context of the consumer he's interacting with a particular screen, etc.
Yes.
Earlier, Damien, you were talking about you and your son being at McDonald's.
Yes.
And how beautifully you differentiated between CX and UX. Would you like to take us through that example?
Yeah, I think the McDonald's one is really interesting because I've got a 7-year-old. And
okay.
The other day we went to McDonald's and he walked straight up to the touchscreen kiosk thing. So and he was able to order a Happy Meal for himself and his brother. And he asked for my card and I gave him my credit card. He scanned that. And he was able to do the entire purchase process on his own, unaided. Mm. And it really made me realize, actually, that's a really good sign of a great experience.
Mm.
You know, obviously, kids are growing up as digital natives now. You know, digital is just part of their lives. So that is an element. But I think for a 7-year-old to be able to interact entirely just kind of proves the value, I guess, of UX in that environment, that if he can do it, then pretty much anyone can go in and use that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the CX thing is just really emphasizing the point that CX would look at an entire journey with McDonald's. They would look at maybe our whole relationship with McDonald's, how we feel after every interaction. They're much more worried, I guess, about our opinions and our attitudes and values. Whereas I think UX is much more zoomed into the interaction, and that interaction being simple and easy and, you know, helping us get our job done. And in that example, it does exactly that.
Yeah, yeah. And it kept in mind the age of the user and what the child needs to feel at the end of the, finishing of the interaction. And of course, the dad also felt happy and proud. Another gratification. Yeah.
I mean, that McDonald's experience is actually really interesting because if you sit and observe people, very few people walk up to the counter that I've noticed anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was kind of doing my job in some ways when I was at McDonald's with him because I started to observe other people and I saw many people walking straight up to those touchscreen kiosks. And I thought that was just a really interesting way in which McDonald's have changed the relationship there. So instead of walking straight up to the counter and speaking to a member of staff, that we've learned that, and also the placement as you walk in the door, all of the kiosks are in big touchscreen screens that are quite hard to miss. And they draw that interaction. And obviously it makes the experience much quicker as well. So they've done it very well there, I think.
Okay. So, Damien, every client wants to be and even believes they're customer centric, right? I mean, there was always more, but they believe they are. So then why, the UX is always not customer centered? Are there any misconceptions there? What is it that's not happening?
Yeah, I think this is a difficult one because, if you look around you, there's still so many bad experiences. You know, you just have to think about every time I explain UX to somebody who doesn't know it, they can immediately think of an experience where that they've had online or wherever that hasn't been great. And I think that what happens there is that boardrooms are full of people who are very well-meaning, and think they're customer centric. But actually, when it comes to the point of making difficult decisions, often they don't make those decisions with customers in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the reality, is that it's very easy to make decisions based on data. and numbers, and sometimes those can dehumanize the people that are actually interacting. And I think that sometimes, and I'm not just aiming this at boardrooms, but I think that's typically where the big decisions are made. And I think sometimes they can be a little bit far removed from everyday customers. Mm. And I think one way to combat that would be looking at things like exposure hours. So I think looking at how can we engage the board with real people on a more regular basis so that when they're making those decisions, they really have that idea in mind. And I read something, I don't know if this still happens, but over here in the Royal Mail, so the post office, the postal service, I think all of the senior executives have to spend a certain amount of time in a local post office. So I think that's a really good example of where, you know, the exposure hours, they have to see the old lady who's trying to send stuff and doesn't understand technology. And I think that's a really good principle to adhere to become more customer centric.
Yeah. Get in the customer's shoes and get to know them as real people in their life, in their world. So, you know, you mentioned, Damien, that data is dehumanizing, you know, that aspect of interaction and the finer aspects of the interface with the consumer. So on the other hand, then behavioral science and semiotics, which is looking in between the claimed in between the behind the obvious, would you say that has a role for UX design as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, a lot of design work, when we're designing interactions, we're looking at changing behavior. Ultimately, is, you know, we want somebody to buy more, to engage more, to whatever the business goal is. So I think behavior change is fundamental to UX and how people interact. We have a behavioral science team at Ipsos, so quite often we are in conversations with them about how do we design an experience to change behavior and to influence that. So behavioral science definitely is a key part of the process. And semiotics, fascinating. I studied that a long time ago and only recently have kind of applied it to the UX role. But semiotics is kind of all around the science of kind of signs, really. So when we see so padlocks and star ratings and things like that, we kind of feel more security. So, and you see this when you're trying to design a website for trust, for example. So I think there's many symbols that reference trust in our society. And it, obviously that's cultural as well, because different cultures have different colours and symbols. But I think integrating that into the design experience and the journey and the interaction is really key to, I guess, communicating without words. That's in essence, I think, semiotics. And that's where design comes in, you know, really important in that interaction.
Yes. So for website design, like you were mentioning earlier, this would be critical, actually, to look at those aspects. Damien, so if you had to sum up, a good UX experience must do, and what are those things?
Yes. I mean, obviously, that depends on the context. But I would say the sort of fundamentals that I quite often think of, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, where it's like sort of food, shelter. I think there's a similar hierarchy of needs when it comes to UX. And I think the bottom rung, the very sort of fundamentals have to be, it's easy, it's fast, it's accessible to people. So, you know, no one's excluded. It's easy to understand, it's credible. So I think you've got that fundamental layer, and you can't really get to, you know, enjoyable or delightful until you've got the fundamentals right. Mm. And I've seen many briefs over the years from companies looking for a delightful user experience, but they haven't addressed the fundamentals. So it's a building blocks process.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that. And Damien, earlier you were taking this example of a bike. And
yes, so, the unboxing, the unboxing thing. So I thought it was a really interesting project that I saw, which is a company called VanMoof Bikes. And basically what they did was they found that they're an online store, so they ship bikes. So you buy a bike online, they send it to you. And what they were finding is that many customers were complaining that the bike was damaged in transit. So they were getting, you know, the battered, beaten up boxes with the bikes inside. And I just thought it was a really interesting process where they took on board that, you know, the customer feedback. And then they looked at, well, how can we redesign this? How can we influence this? And I think behavioral science kind of comes into this, whether they use that or not, I'm not sure. But so what they did is they redesigned the box to look like a television. So it was, you know, like the outside of the box has a TV on it and the inside has a bike. And just that change resulted in much lower rates of damage. And I just thought, as a design, you know, experience and designing the journey, and looking at every aspect of the user journey, that was a really good example.
Yeah, very insightful. And once you mentioned it, I looked it up. 80% it decreased, you know, the damage during transit. And even when they pointed this out that, you know, this is a deception, even then it worked. So the visual aspect of it. So how insightful that was. So they came to they identified the real problem, and then they said, okay, what is it? Without too much thinking, immediate care, handle with care. How can we communicate? And what a brilliant, solution that became characteristic for the brand. I think they started talking about it a lot. So there was another example you had mentioned, Damien, which was also very interesting in the banking space.
So Monzo is a kind of what's known as a neobank, so a new bank over in the UK. So they're challenging the more traditional established banks. And so this was in reference to vulnerability. So one of the areas that we're looking at a lot at the moment is kind of, you know, I mentioned it a second ago, so being accessible, designing for everyone, but vulnerable, designing for vulnerable users is about designing to prevent harm. So what Monzo are doing, which I found really interesting, is they're looking at how do we restrict people from who maybe have gambling addiction or are susceptible to gambling. How do we restrict that behavior, and how do we support them in not doing that? So they designed something where ultimately you could put a block, so any card that you use wouldn't be able to buy or pay for gambling. So what they did is they made something where they created something called positive friction. So they kind of put a barrier in somebody's way. If they wanted to turn that back on and pay for gambling again, that they had to phone customer support, so they couldn't do it via an app or online. And then there was a 48-hour cooling off period before they could then activate that card and use it again for gambling. So that was a really nice example where they'd taken a very specific interaction. They thought about the users and what the need was and how to prevent harm. And they designed that interaction in such a way that really worked. And I can't remember the stats off the top of my head, but a lot of people have turned it on and not very many people have turned it off. So it's obviously working, which is great.
It's working. Yeah. For good habits and de-addiction, I mean, these UX can play such a big role. Damien, would you like to share something about the Ipsos process for UX design?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can't talk about specific projects. But I think fundamentally our UX process is based on the fundamentals of good UX, which is really kind of understanding users, really understanding the context in which they're using something, I think a key element of what we do is we look into what are they currently using. So if we're going to design something new, we really need to understand what's the problem people are trying to solve, mm-hmm. and how do they currently solve that problem, mm-hmm. and what's good and bad about that experience, and where are the gaps in the experience. So then we really get that foundational knowledge before we go anywhere near design. So we have to understand what's the problem we're trying to solve, and what's the context of that problem. And then what we do is we deep dive then into ideation, and we come up with lots of ideas, come up with hypotheses as to why, what we think's happening and how we can fix that. And then once we've got our design ideas, we take them into prototypes. We test those prototypes with people, with the right people, you know, the target audience. And we go through this iterative process then of making improvements, making changes, testing them, and keep going around that loop until we're happy. And then we look more at the detailed design and content layer, test again through that process. So really what we do there is we make sure that before it goes anywhere near release or launch, mm-hmm. we fundamentally understand who's going to use it, why they're going to use it, why would they would switch from what they're currently using, and that they can interact and use it as intended. Mm-hmm. And then obviously once it's live, then mm-hmm. we monitor, we keep looking at it, we, you know, and start looking maybe at phase two, because, you know, user expectations change over time,
yeah.
business goals change over time. So I think ultimately a website or an app or whatever we're designing is never finished.
Mm.
There's never a point at which we wash our hands and go, right, we're all done for the day. That's it. We're not going to make changes.
Yeah.
So it's a constant iterative cycle of a process.
So Damien, like you've talked about context, if you could elaborate it further you like how Spotify does it and how Thread does it. So would you like to show how they
keep the context? Yeah. So Spotify, Spotify is a really interesting business model, I find, because they, with each interaction a user makes, the algorithm learns something new and then adapts it to the experience and then generates more personalized playlists and more personalized content. And then it effectively increases user engagement and then makes it even harder to switch away from because it's such a useful experience. Mm. One other thing they do, which is quite interesting, is that the running, so if you use Spotify for running, it will adapt the playlist based on the tempo that you're running at to match the tempo of the song. So it will intelligently select new songs based on your preferences and the tempo you're running at to keep you at a certain pace. Mm. So that's a really good example of adapting the context of use, the data it's receiving, what it knows about you, and giving you an experience on the fly. Mm. So I think Spotify is done incredibly well, and there's a lot going on behind the scenes that maybe the average user doesn't see. But it's a very clever business model, I believe. The Thread service is interesting. So slightly different form of personalization in that it's not adaptive to me on the fly. It's probably a bit different to that. But what it does is, so when you sign up, you select, you know, your body shape, you select how tall you are, your weight, your size of all your body measurements. And then you select how you like clothes to fit. Do you like them quite loose, tight, baggy, whatever? And then once it's done that, you then select a bunch of preferences based on the looks that you like. So as a guy, I don't like going into shops and buying clothes. I just don't enjoy that experience. So what Thread has done is it's a service that basically takes advantage of that. And every month they give me a feed of potential things, so inspiration of here's a look that you could buy right now. So here's the jeans, the shirt, the jacket, and the shoes, and you can buy it all in one straight through Thread.
Mm.
And you can scroll through, and each month you will get, I don't know, five or six different looks to get inspired from. So I just think as a service, what it does is it taps right into many men don't enjoy shopping. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to be inspired. We don't want to have to look through various shelves. Yeah. And it knows the fit and the sort of style that we like. So it just takes the pain away from shopping for me. So I think that's a really nice example.
Yeah, that's lovely. And it also is kind of encouraging you to perhaps try on certain elements of the look, which you don't know how they'd look, exactly. When it comes together. So they're helping you experiment and giving you the confidence. And in that sense, you know, they're kind of driving it for you in terms of, you know, creating your wardrobe. That's amazing. Yeah. And I think I was just thinking, Damien, that brands, you know, everything is about brand experience today, the brand relationship. I mean, if they work closely with understanding how the UX is impacting that for a regular consumer, how critical it is, you know, the evolution will also be, you know, more seamless as technology is evolving, as the consumer is evolving, and the brands need to evolve. But the UX is playing such a big part, and not just for brands like Spotify, Thread, and Netflix, I mean, otherwise also for banks also. Now that brings us to the future trends in UX.
Yes.
You know, because Damien, I was talking to another expert from Google, and he was saying that the connected experiences itself can be a key differentiator for brands and businesses, you know, and, you know, in context of APIs, etc. So this whole seamlessness, multiple devices and the blended view of the journey, because I was thinking that even when you go for shopping at a retail, you carry your mobile and sometimes you've searched just before entering and then you pay with your mobile. So there is a digital footprint, mm-hmm. you know, being left. So nothing is just online or offline, you know, in terms of the UX design. So in this whole context, what would you like to talk about the future trends? Yeah.
I mean, there's a few different areas that I could go into. So I could pick lots of different things, but I think the first thing that I would like to pick on there is the whole omni-channel experience. Mm-hmm. So moving from your device to the website to the wherever. So, and I think banking is a really good example here. So, you know, when you use an app for a bank and you use the website, you kind of expect it to be exactly the same, right? So you expect mm-hmm. the same experience, you expect things to do the same layout, same terminology. And you also expect the same that if you went in branch and you spoke to an advisor, a customer advisor, that they would also use the same terminology. Mm-hmm. And they don't. And quite often the experience is all different and it isn't quite as seamless as we would like. And, you know, you extend that even further, that if you apply for a loan from a bank and you've already got a current account with them, you would expect them to know who you are and all of the information. But yeah, they don't mm-hmm. act in that way. You have to apply as if you're a completely new customer once again. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, the future is a much more joined up, seamless experience. You know, the where every interaction you have is predictable and consistent, no matter what device, what area you're logging into. So I think that's the kind of short term view of where things should be. And it's frustrating things aren't there already, really. But when we look a little bit further beyond future, I think, you know, personalization we've mentioned, I think having much more intelligent personalization is key. I think what we will also see is with the advent, the addition of AI, so artificial intelligence, I think what that is going to do for many users is change our role to more overseeing automated interactions. So if you think of a farmer, for example, a farmer will no longer be out in his tractor plowing fields. He'll have machines doing that. A central unit or central console where he can see, you know, where things are at and are they doing what he expected. I think we're going to have much more of a role of interpreting data and patterns in data and looking at dashboards. So I think the future is, I mean, there's a real design challenge for us there, designing that in a way that is really understandable. So I think that's one. Another area, I think, is a movement called Zero UI, which is so zero user interface. I think that's where it's an attempt at freeing people from devices and screens so they can interact with computers or technology in a more natural way. So voice interfaces, gesture, movement, even glances maybe. So I think that is something that I really believe is the future. We don't want to be sat in front of computers and holding mobile phones all day to getting what we need done. So the more we can move to that, the better. And then obviously you've got the whole mixed reality, metaverse, you know, that there's so many interesting things there, and it's quite hard to picture what exactly that is because obviously it's still being defined. You could argue it's almost already here with certain games like Roblox and Fortnite and stuff like that. So
perhaps shopping also.
So there's so much going on in the world of technology, and I think that's why I'm so excited about UX's role, because you know each of those interactions has to add value, otherwise people just aren't going to use them. So if you want people to adopt this new technology and great new service, they have to see the value, and it has to be easy to use and worth it.
Mother's best advice.
I think don't eat something that smells funny.
Useful. Okay. Yeah. Favorite personal possession?
My watches.
Okay. Alternate profession could have been?
Designer of some description.
What would you do on Mars for fun?
Wow. Take photos.
Okay. One thing you love about your son?
His fearlessness.
Your most often used phrase as per your wife?
Make a decision.
Good. Which animal will you be? Which animal will you like to be if given a choice?
Oh, a panther.
Okay. One thing no one knows about you?
A lot of people don't know about the photography thing we just talked about.
Yeah. A book you'd like to gift to all your friends?
Quiet by Susan Cain.
Okay. What would you tell your 18-year-old self?
Feel the fear and do it anyway.
So, Damien, would you like to share any online addresses with our audiences? It will be there in the show notes as well. But
yeah, I mean, I think LinkedIn is probably the one that I use the most. I'm on Twitter, but I use that mainly for learning. So LinkedIn is the one that I use for interacting with people. Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that I was going to say is I've looked at some of the previous videos, and I really just really like the fact that all the guests have deep knowledge in different areas. I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy from Google I found fascinating, talking about, he also was talking about personalization in the future. So, yeah, I mean, I just think that the depth of knowledge is great. Yeah, like, share and subscribe, please.
Okay. Thank you so much, Damien. It's been wonderful to have you on the show. Loved hosting you.